You're listening to DraftKings Network.
On today's episode of The Cooligans, thank you so much for listening, by the way. We talk about so much. We talked to Sean Wright Phillip.
Crazy.
Oh, my God. He brought, first of all, you know he had to check a bag because he brought a lot of smoke with him. Oh, my God.
There was a lot of SWP energy is going to be a new, it's a new in the lexicon now.
That's right. Plus, we talk a little bit about Kobe. We talk a little bit about Chicharito. We talk about a lot more.
Okay. And then in the second segment, we're talking to Peter Wilt, the man who invented American soccer. I said it. Yeah. We talk about a couple puppies signing with MLS teams. So,
that's right.
A lot of fun. A lot of fun things to talk about
that's
today.
That's right.
So all this and more today on The Cooligans.
Hey, guys. Elise LeHue, general manager with Sky Blue FC. And I got that bag with The Cooligans.
Hey.
Yeah, baby!
What is
come
up?
On.
What is good? All right. There's been improvement from last week's baby. So that's
good. I couldn't
good.
Talk. Now I can talk, but now I can't walk.
Now your leg doesn't work.
Walking like I'm talking. It's going to take a couple months for me to get both of them in one shot.
Okay, Migos.
Yeah. I done broke my right foot, I think.
Yeah, we should give people a medical update real quick. What happened to your ankle?
I don't know. I hurt a little bit, right? And it hurt for like 3 or 4 days. And
how'd you hurt it?
I think it was getting out of the car. You know, like that move where you push off. I felt a little twinge in the middle of the top of my foot. That's all.
Okay.
And I was like, that's nothing.
All right,
and then
so,
I walked through the pain.
So you're doing intense physical activity.
For me, yes.
And something.
Don't you dare compare it to you getting out of a car, okay? Somewhat of a heavier load here, okay? And I just remember, like, you know, like you walking through the pain. It felt like a sore muscle.
Okay.
And then So DJ Step, the homie, is in town, right?
Okay.
He invites me out to go to a club Friday night. So Friday night, I'm out here. I'm dancing. I'm doing my thing, right? And I felt my ankle hurting, like the top of my foot. And I was like, you know what? Seems to be getting worse. Maybe I should just go home, right? So I go home. Nothing makes me feel older than that, right? I go home.
It's 8:15 p.m.
And by the way, dancing, I'm just having the blue plate special at a local Denny's. Right? It's like 3 a.m, right? I'm like, I should fucking go home. Yeah. So I go home. I wake up the next day. And my ankle is this big.
Okay. So I didn't realize this was going to be such a long story. Hello. Welcome to the show, everybody. My name is Christian Polanco.
And I'm injured. Alexis Guerrero's baby.
Okay. He's giving you his whole medical history before we even introduce ourselves.
That's right.
We are your favorite stand-up comedians that host the funniest soccer show that you have ever seen.
That's right. It's also the most injured and the gulliest soccer show in the world.
Yes. It's weird when the non-active one has the most injuries.
Well, I mean, that's how it happens. You know, I literally, my body's built for a sedate lifestyle. And I think getting out of the car is just too much.
A little too much, you know? It's like you just tore a rotator cuff spinning up pasta.
Yeah. Just whipping that sauce.
You know how that happens? It's a common injury. Most people.
Doctor's like, how'd you do it? Guy's like, threw a baseball 101 miles an hour. I'm like, you think that's tough? I was making mashed potatoes the old school way.
Yes, I'm glad that we can laugh a little bit because these last couple of days have been incredibly challenging.
It's been so tough
for a lot of people, us included. I mean, it's difficult to you can't really talk to anyone without anyone sort of having some sort of experience or really talking about how Kobe Bryant affected them in some way.
And he did. And he had a positive effect on a lot of people. I mean, just we were sort of talking about with a bunch of comics, like how big is Kobe? Kobe is bigger in L.A. than I think like Jay-Z or Biggie ever was in New York. Does that make sense?
Sure. I don't know how to make those comparisons. I think it's apples to oranges kind of thing.
I mean, I don't think you can't really quantify. So it's how do you feel? And regardless of what you say, I'm going to say you're wrong.
Kobe, like anyone who passes, they mean something to that particular person, right? Like there are people who absolutely Kobe was revered. There are people who hate him for his past. So you understand that like it's a there's a lot, there's nuance to it. It's difficult to comprehend, but everybody has their own experience that shouldn't necessarily be dismissed.
I think, look, there's a lot that we could talk about. There's certainly, if you have a gripe or you're not as sad that he's gone, I get it. You know what I mean? There's a lot of issues. I want to just talk about sort of the last few years of his life. How much, you know, at the end of the day, this was a dad that passed away. What I can only imagine is trying to calm his daughter down and tell her that everything's going to be all right. Like the image of that, just regardless of what happened elsewhere, the image and the thought of that, I don't have kids. You know what I mean? Not that I know of, you know, mm-hmm. you know, please.
Anything happen? Yeah. You have a TV show now, I think.
Yeah. All of a sudden, right? Like, kid, if you're out there, just show up when D's not around. It's going to make things a lot easier for me. But no, all jokes aside, and like, this is the only way we know how to cope, so I'm sorry. But at the end of the day, it's just that image is gut-wrenching, and all the other families that were in that helicopter and the pilot, everyone along, it's just gut-wrenching. So you want to sort of take what are the positives, and so many people are sharing videos of like inspirational things he said. Yeah. And that whole idea of like the Mamba mentality, you know what I mean? And people getting up, and somebody was mad. They're like, of course the NBA didn't cancel games. It's like, Kobe wouldn't have wanted that. Kobe would have wanted those games to be played.
Sure.
And there's all these like little, like Mike Tirico came out and he put out a video or an explanation of a moment where his last game, he was at 59 points and he goes to the line or gets the first one to 59 points. In order to get 60, one of the players on the other team steps over the line.
Gordon Hayward. Yeah.
Gordon Hayward. So that in case he missed it, he got the chance again. Like that little camaraderie, all these like little stories that are coming out.
He was respected.
Yeah. All these things are just sort of incredible. I know you were I wasn't a massive Kobe fan. I'm a Knicks fan and he destroyed us.
Yeah.
Step of the way.
I definitely had respect for Kobe, but he was a huge part of my childhood and actually brought this. This is my real my NBA card collection. I know it says Magic cards on it,
which is wildly embarrassing. You don't think this is embarrassing? This is wildly embarrassing.
I didn't collect Magic cards.
No, you were cooler than that.
I collected, basketball cards, baseball cards, and also comic book cards.
Okay,
all right. I'm not claiming to be cool or have ever kissed a girl till last week. But look, as you can see, I always talk about Penny Hardaway, and that Penny Hardaway was my favorite player, so that's why he's on the first page. But Tim Duncan and Keith Van Horn.
Ooh.
Huge fan of Keith Van Horn.
So you only collected all-stars, is what you're saying.
Stephon Marbury over here.
We don't need to see all of them.
I'm just saying, Kobe? I'm getting to the Kobe one. This is Kobe's page right here. So I had a bunch of cards. Look at this. Upper Deck, Fleer, NBA Hoops.
Oh, man.
Okay, this is my childhood right here. This is what I spent every cent. I received on.
You know what? I wish I had a collection of pictures of sandwiches I spent all my money on. At the end of the day, maybe that's not a bad thing.
No, man. But this was it was difficult. Obviously, when I heard the news, I was my brother had texted me and just tragic.
Did you ever get to see him play live?
I never got to see him play live.
No.
I couldn't. You know, as a kid, I didn't have money to go to games and stuff like that.
We played until we were older.
Yeah, and I never really went to too many basketball games. I just never got a chance to see him play. Which
my
is,
first memory of Kobe was my most vivid early memory of him is when he was on Moesha. Remember that?
Sure.
That's right. Dude was on Moesha. I think he was like 17 years old.
Yeah. Well, he took Brandy to the prom.
He took Brandy to the prom, dude.
Yeah, that was huge.
Hell yeah. Go. Bye, Brandy. And then I went to, I think it was in 2012 or 2013, Jeremy Lin scored 38 points on the Lakers. I was sitting courtside for that game. I met this dude who did all the promotion for the NBA.
Next to Ben Stiller, I think, right?
Like, remember, I acted with Ben Stiller on a Knicks commercial. Remember
that? Right. Yeah.
Wow, that's kind of cool that you made that combination. Yeah. And no one will ever see it because it was to get Kawhi Leonard to come to the Knicks. And guess what? It didn't work.
It didn't work out.
And I tried to keep the jersey and they caught me. I had a Kawhi Leonard number, I think it was number two, right? I can't remember his name.
I don't remember.
Number two. I had a Knicks number two with Leonard on the back. And they ripped that joint right off me. But anyway, Ben Stiller goes, "Hey, man, you're funny." I was like, "Woo!" But anyway, the Kobe story.
Yeah.
Jeremy Lin scores 38 points. I'm sitting courtside. Kobe only had 33. And I remember at halftime, it looked like they were going to be going shot for shot. Right. So if you ever sit courtside, the only reason I got these tickets because my buddy did the promotion for the NBA. He texts me, "Hey, man, I'm in town. Do you want to go to a Knicks game?" I'm like, "Absolutely." Right. middle of Linsanity, right? At halftime, you get to go back to like the VIP area where they have like all the food and stuff. Yeah, yeah. And I'm standing there between John Starks and Allen Houston. And I was like, huh? And they're like, yeah,
look,
yeah,
at,
yeah.
Look at us. It was a Paul Rudd. Look yeah. at us.
Who would have thought? Not me. Right? And I was like, ah. And they're like, yes, we've talked to each other before. And I'm like, oh, man. You know, I'm freaking out. And then I go over and they had all these like they had sushi and everything. And then they had Kobe beef.
Mm.
And I was like, Kobe beef. I was like, I'm going to eat this like Jeremy Lin's going to eat Kobe today. Right. And Allen Houston goes, yeah, man, can I reach over here? Like, I was like, no, not even a giggle.
Couldn't he, you can't get Allen Houston to crack.
Yeah.
He's tough. He's
Allen
tough.
Houston, come on. Patrick Ewing giggle. Come on, Patty Ewing.
One thing I want to point out was the
that
effect.
That I sat courtside?
No, not that. Okay. Even though that was monumental.
Yeah,
The effect and influence Kobe had on soccer. And that
the women's soccer.
Yeah, yeah, and that the sport had on him. He was always at soccer events. We're seeing some photos here. He was always at a bunch of events. He was always
supported in Italy.
Yes, that's
he grew
right.
up in Tuscany, if I'm not mistaken. His dad was a superstar at the Italian game.
Played basketball, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So D'Antoni, remember Mike D'Antoni?
Yeah, yeah.
He also played on that team. So he basically grew up with Mike D'Antoni as well. But so he learned about soccer that way. Huge fan.
And he supported the U.S. Women's National Team all the time. He would always talk about how his daughters loved the U.S. Women's National Team. And he respected those players because they were role models to his daughters and clearly saw like a pathway for them to, you know, become either professional players or just be inspiring. We're seeing him with Mia Hamm. He was a Barcelona fan. He was a huge AC Milan fan. It was also new. I think the AC Milan players are going to be wearing black armbands in their next game for Kobe. We're seeing him here with Harry Kane.
Which obviously goes to show he does charity work.
He does charity work.
There he is with the Tottenham player.
He's a good,
right?
Yeah, a lot of, they needed lowering the support.
lowering his value no, but of a photo.
We hear
Kobe.
How many athletes he was in contact with who he always supported.
Well, you and I follow a ton of soccer players on Instagram, right? Just because of what we do. A lot of European ones. I follow a ton of Arsenal players. Everyone was putting up Kobe tributes. And it should have made sense, but at first I was like, wow, I never realized that. Of course, everyone loves the NBA in Europe, but you never realize the influence. Like Romelu Lukaku put up a huge thing saying like how much he inspired him and made him a better player, and he was his biggest inspiration. And it's like you would assume he would be a fan of a soccer player, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And no, here he is talking about Kobe and the way Kobe went after and the way Kobe trained harder than anyone else.
Yeah, but not only was he inspiring, but he was like one of these dudes that would call you, you know, like when people were injured, he would call them and keep them motivated. Keep inspiring them. Tell them same thing with Gordon Hayward when Gordon Hayward broke his ankle.
Yeah,
Kobe was like one of the first to call him, tell him to like stay focused and work, you know, on the rehab day, one day at a time, things like that. So when you hear these stories, it's obviously difficult to not get incredibly emotional.
It's been a sad few days because of all these stories.
Yeah, because
out.
He really tried to do something positive in the world.
And look at the way Shaq reacted. You know, him and Shaq famously had a huge beef. Remember Shaq did that freestyle where he said, how's my ass taste? Like,
yeah, yeah.
They had the real beef, and Shaq is distraught from every point. He even put up like a rap, like Kobe had given him bars for a song of his, which the two of them should have never rapped.
They should.
But
it was wildly responsible, you know, on both parties.
They're both at fault for that. But Shaq, and here's the thing. Shaq's from Newark, right? If there's one thing that I know about people from Newark is that we will carry a grudge forever. It's just who we are, okay?
Yes, you're built different.
You slight me, and I'll never forget about
even,
it.
For even the smallest thing.
Oh, you have no idea. But Shaq put up how hurt he was and how much he missed them and how he just assumed he'd be around forever. And it was one of those things where I know they sort of repatched the relationship now in these years. But you know that there's some stuff. I know because I'm from Newark and so Shaq, that there's some stuff that Shaq had never said. Some stuff that Shaq had never covered. He held on to some stuff. I could feel it in some of those posts.
Yeah.
And it almost makes you want to, right? It made me think, like, should I reach out to people and let them know that, you know, forgive right? Just move on. Who cares? I didn't, because again, I'm from Newark, right? I'm gonna hold on to it forever. But it sort of gives you an idea. It's like there's so many ways that this dude has touched so many the lives of so many people in so many positive ways. And even people that had arguments with him and gripes and longtime grudges are feeling the effects of this.
Exactly. So yeah, there's nothing left to be said besides you know, obviously rest in peace. And
to Gigi,
to everybody that was on the helicopter. It's incredibly difficult, and you can't even imagine what like their family is going through, the Bryant family. But
all the families involved.
Yeah, yeah. Incredibly difficult. So yeah, with that said, rest in peace, Kobe. Let's talk. Let's go to a review.
I mean, people are going to notice there's a massive box in front of me.
You know what, Alexis? Nobody's noticed.
Look away. Okay? Also, I've never looked skinnier on camera. Okay, but we're going to get to this in a second because we like to show love to the people who show love to us.
Exactly. And we did get a review on Apple Podcasts that we appreciated. So make sure you leave a review if you listen to this podcast.
Five stars.
And this came from Shader. 33, and it just says thank you and five stars. And they say want to say thank you. Thank you to y'all. I started listening to the pod since April. I've been dealing with depression and life has been rough for me, but you guys put out funny content to keep my mind in a good place. You guys cover every big news around the world and bring on amazing guests, but really the question is, when is Thierry Henry making the an appearance on the show?
Let's go.
Would love to hear from my favorite player ever. Every day I keep trying to decide if I'm gully or gully adjacent. I think I'm turning mad gully. Yeah. Go Gunners.
Let's, first of all, come on, you Gunners. Second of all, would love Thierry Henry to be on the show. It's really all I'm asking for right now. It's my goal for this year. And also, welcome to the gully life.
Okay, yeah, we welcome all, yeah. All right?
The shouts to the gully adjacents. We need them.
Exactly. They support the gully.
Right? Who's know? There to pick us up from the game? The minivan with the apple slices.
We need you, right? In our lives.
Cutting the crust off the sandwiches. Gully adjacents.
So thank you, all gully and gully adjacent folks. Help us get to 700 reviews on iTunes. So leave a review if you want to do that, please.
Now, let's open this massive box.
Okay, we got this giant box here.
Imagine a dude pops out of it. That'd be dope.
Okay. What is it, a bachelor party?
It's, oh my God.
Okay.
No. All right. Here, can you grab one of these?
Wow, these boxes are gigantic.
Hold on. Here, grab that one.
All right. Okay, I know what this is.
Well, it says it on the outside. This is insane.
From. This is clearly from Adidas.
Holy.
Holy smokes.
Look at this. It says Predator on the front.
Okay.
What?
I think I have a feeling. I've been seeing commercials for these.
Oh.
Oh boy.
Yo. Look at the in drip. You don't have to bleep that out.
A shoehorn.
Yeah, baby.
Oh man, thank you, Adidas.
Hold on, I didn't get a shoehorn. Mine might be in the bag itself. Hey, Alexis, we're excited to introduce you to the newest Adidas cleats, the Predator 2.0. Oh, my God. Look at this. This cleat debuts demon skin technology. Okay, cool.
Okay. All right. A little Satan worshiping.
Yeah. All right. What goth kid got a job at Adidas? Made up of 406 spikes on the upper. It adds more spin to the ball because you know how much I'm going to be using this. Oh, my God. They're not kidding. Look at all those spikes at the top of
Look at this. This is...
Can't wait to hear what you think. Your friends at Adidas Football. Hashtag Predator. Hashtag gift. Gifted by Adidas.
Yo, this is huge. Thank you so much, Adidas. This is like...
Bro, you go wait till you see me at the deli, right? Just like getting in front of them, one of them old women that walking in front of me, like, bah, bah.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how much Alexis is going to put these to use, but I would be impressed to see him kick some into the upper 90 with these. These are dope. I mean, if you can't see these, they have like, they have little spikes on them to put fear into your opponents.
That's right.
So this is going to be dope. I cannot wait.
First of all, these are just beautiful.
I cannot believe Adidas knows who we are.
Adidas sent us this. And it says my name on it. This wasn't a mistake.
They spelled it correctly, everything. This is incredible.
They got our size correctly?
That's, oh, man.
Adidas, I will be glad to let you know how much I get for this on eBay. I mean, this is going to be.
No, wow. You got to put those to use, Alexis.
For what? Yeah,
with your bad ankle.
Yeah,
and
I
everything.
Can't even move my foot. Look at these. These are gorgeous.
These are dope. Thank you.
Shouts to Adidas.
Thank you so much, Adidas, for these. Oh, unbelievable.
Adidas, can I send you these back for some street shoes? Is that possible?
No, show some gratitude. All right. All right. We'll be back. We're going to be talking about Chicharito after this.
Hey, everybody, thanks so much for listening to the show. We want to bring in one of our sponsors, us and you.
And you, Gully Squad.
Ooh.
You know, the Gully Squad members that are listening, they're like, oh, thank you.
Yeah. No, this is legitimately for you. Thank you so much for being a member of Gully Squad. Also, shouts to all the new members of Gully Squad.
That's right. So we mentioned it last week, and we played a small clip of
a snippet, if you will, of our
small roast. Yeah. Of our roast, of the MLS roast that we did. And people went nuts.
They went ballistic.
So thank you for joining, because I mean, this is the carrot you needed.
Yeah.
For a lot of people, they were
you're
like
trying to dangle a lot in front of you. And this is what got you making fun of MLS.
So look, and like we said, it was super fun. We did it at the Independent Supporters Council conference, and it was an absolute blast. You're never gonna see really anything like it.
There's no other room we could have done these. we'd have to interrupt the game with wireless mics to do this.
And even then, like maybe 10% of the people in the stadium would understand what we're talking about. So again, go to soccercooligans.com and click on the Join Gully Squad button. It's all the way at the bottom. You can click it on the menu as well, and join at whatever level, and you'll get access to a bunch of cool content, like this roast. So
And of course the Slack channel. Hey, post pictures of your pizza and I'll trash it.
People, it's almost, it's like
they asked for this. They made this themselves.
It's like a weird, it's like a masochistic thing that people are like, yeah, Alexis, trash my pizza.
Oh, it gets me going.
All right, soccercooligans.com and click on Join Gully Squad.
And look at Christian wearing the shoes already. You're one of those dudes that when you get a Christmas gift, you put it on right away. I'm not. I'll put it away and then like a week later be like, oh, yeah, it's time.
Oh, these are fire.
Are they? Yes. Demon skin technology.
Yes, we should start. How should we start this segment, Alexis?
I don't know, by talking about it.
Talk about Chicharito. We discussed this during the break. Chicharito, we were how thrilled were we last week when we it was confirmed that he was coming to MLS.
We were like, this, what a PR, wonderful heaven. This could not, nothing could go
nothing
wrong.
Nothing could go wrong. And Chicharito was like, no, un segundo. Yeah.
I'm sorry, let me just FaceTime my mom real quick and ruin it for everybody.
No, if you don't follow soccer Twitter, what are you doing? But you must have seen Chicharito basically say that he's talking to his parents and he says, to paraphrase, this is the beginning of my retirement. Once he's announced,
the European dream.
Yes, he does say that. But people got caught on
the word retire.
The word retirement was,
he was like, I shall retire to the bedroom. You're like, I told you MLS is a retirement league. I knew
you see,
it.
We can't have these weak-minded players coming to our league.
We got to start buying 22-year-olds, not 32-year-olds.
Wait, do you mean 22-year-olds or a 122-year-old?
Buddy, would you rather get attacked by 100 ducks than the size of horses?
No, look, we had shared it on social media, and I pointed out, like, he was having a very emotional conversation with his parents.
By the way, and you said, if you're the one who tweeted this.
Yeah.
Right? He has apparently like a YouTube reality show.
Yes, he has a vlog. It's not real. It's just a vlog.
It's embarrassing. But you're in the league now. Calm it down, right? He had this like sort of emotional phone call with his mom and his dad. And he was sort of, you had posted this like, people are going to attack the retirement thing. But really, at the end of the day, this is someone who's clearly wants to make his parents proud. We're Latinos. We get it, right? Yeah. I gave up on that dream years ago. I became a comedian. But most people...
I think you gave up on being Latino.
I'm up for grabs. Who wants it? No.
It's just a racial draft all over again.
Anybody? I'll go Albanian. You know what I mean? No, but like the thing of like the whole like... the tweet was talking about like this emotional outpouring of trying to like make your parents proud and your parents having to be the one to be like, don't be upset. This is great. Don't worry about it. Yada, yada, yada. And we got attacked from both sides of the argument.
This was there. Yeah, people were obviously the MLS diehards were less like, no, he's going to be a flop. And look at him. He's, you know, he's already thinking about retirement. But when the way I took it was he going to, or I said, let's say leaving Mexico, going from Chivas to, he ended up going to Manchester United. That was such a huge dream, right? And in Mexico,
huge moment for a Mexican player.
For all of Mexico is proud of him for making that move. And that's why Liga MX players going to Europe is huge. And that there's so much to be proud of to make that move.
Right.
And
it's a little bit of validation for the Latin American player, which is huge.
And we know Chicharito, while he was at West Ham, wasn't getting, you know, he wasn't doing as well as he wanted to. At Sevilla, wasn't getting a lot of playing time. And he wanted to play. And if you watch the end of that clip, he says, he's crying. He's like, I just want to play.
And he says, I know I could still do it. I believe in myself, but if they're not going to give me the opportunity, I just want to go play.
Yeah. And I can understand why he feels like that is the failure to some degree. And that going to MLS is saying, hey, I'm giving up on trying to make, he could still be a prominent, you know, a player in La Liga, like if he got the opportunity. And he from basically, if you watch this episode, he really feels like he's misunderstood. And he shows a lot of vulnerability, and you got to give him some props for being this open about his life and his career and his family life.
I mean, I understand that feeling of having to sort of give up on one part of your dream. If his dream was to go to Europe and play there and be successful, to some degree he did it, but the feeling of having to sort of let go of that, I get that. The part that surprises me is how, you know, people were just upset that this was even brought up, that we tweeted it. People were saying like, oh, we were trying to get like clickbait. We were trying to get click clout, which I'm like, you can't even say that.
Click clout?
Click clout. That's the sound your boots are going to make when you walk on this hardwood floor.
Click clout, click clout.
You know, I can't believe you put them on. Whatchamacallit, people said that like, people were like, and you call yourselves comedians, like, Doug, we put up an emotional post.
And people are just absurd. It's just like they expect comedians, like everything has to be funny. You have one serious thought.
Yeah.
You're canceled.
Wow. You feel? Well, stop being a comic.
Boom. Yeah. We're done with you.
It's so funny. Even when we put up the roast joke, someone put these jokes are lame AF. It's like, well, you go ahead and do it.
go to these other MLS roasts. Very soccer specific roasts.
Watch the other roasts
that are clearly available to all of us. But no, man, look, this is the last thing. I think he probably should have chosen his words better.
I don't think so. I think say whatever the hell you want. I mean, I get the retirement word. People were like, I hope you speak Spanish because retire also means leave. Yeah, we get it. Click on our profile.
It's just, look, it's the nature of having, having a behind the scenes anything, right? Yeah. Where things are going to be misconstrued. And he had, when he was doing the media day, the MLS media day and everything, he had to defend this point. And I'm sure he didn't want to waste his time doing this. No. So that's why I say for his own like peace of mind, he probably shouldn't have used the word retirement. But if that's how we felt, it is what it is. And if he's fine defending himself and defending the point of view, I think he's going to do fine in the league. So
he
I'm not worried
it up
about
with
it.
His play. So like all of this is a moot point. This is just something for, you know, fans of the rival teams to attach to.
Okay, we're fans of Chicharito. So have a great year. All right. We have to show our interview. We have to play our interview from the United Soccer Coaches Convention.
That's right. We're in Baltimore this year.
That's right.
And we saw a legendary Premier League player.
That's right. Sean Wright Phillips.
That's right. Ian Wright's kid. Bradley Wright's Phillips' brother. We saw him and we're like, yo, you want to do this interview? And he was like, oh, hold on a second. Let me just make sure I bring all the smoke.
I'm glad I packed the smoke with me.
I need some extra pockets. for all the smoke.
Yeah, look, Sean Mike Phillips obviously played for Manchester City, played for Chelsea, also played for the New York Red Bulls with his brother. And he had a lot of opinions on MLS. And, you know, we didn't know exactly what to expect.
We just asked the question and floodwaters.
But it's just like, we basically said, like, what was your former employer like? And he was like, okay, finally, someone asked me.
Well, let me tell you, he left a Yelp review.
That's basically what he did. But we had a great time talking to Sean Wright Phillips. I'm glad he got to sit down with us.
I'm glad he got to meet us.
What a privilege.
What an honor.
But here is our interview with Sean Wright Phillips at the United Soccer Coaches Convention.
Yeah, that's right. We're back. United Soccer Coaches Convention. I keep saying United States Soccer Coaches Convention. Change the name. It's too confusing.
To make it more comfortable for Alexis.
Get out of here. We are here every time I see you, there's people walking by going, oh, I'm a huge, and they put on a fake Manchester accent. I'm a huge City fan. Oh, I've been since day one. You know they're not. And they only had an Oasis album back in the day. And that's it. But yo, this dude, I mean, I've seen you do so much even after you've left Manchester City. I've seen you carrying the trophy around. You hung out with Venice Beach FC. This dude played for the Red Bulls as well. You know him. You love him. Your dad was like an idol of mine growing up. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, put your hands together unless you drive it, for Sean Wright Phillip, everybody.
Sean, what's up, man?
What's happening, man? You guys good?
Yeah.
You're mad chill all of a sudden.
We met you just a couple moments ago. So thank you so much for doing this and agreeing to do it. We did the pitch. We said, hey, we're stand-up comedians. We do a show about soccer.
Sean still don't believe us.
What's been your interactions with comedy and football or soccer? Like, because obviously whenever we introduce people and say we're stand-up comics and enjoy soccer, especially in America, people are skeptical. They think we're going to make fun of them.
Never really had any. You lot seem like good guys.
Okay.
It's a good chance for me to obviously do something for my mentor and catch up with you guys at the same time. So I was like, yeah, why not?
That's dope. And my mentor is the platform that you hear, the learning platform you hear talking about at the convention. We'll get to that in a second. But looking at soccer in America, you played here your first... Your first entrance into soccer in America was probably Bradley, right? Playing at Red Bull.
No, I'd seen it before, but obviously my brother being here made me watch it a lot more.
Okay.
There was more reason to watch it.
And then you're the perfect person to ask because you played in England, obviously. You played at MLS, and then you went and played in Phoenix with your homie Drogba, right? I'm assuming you're friends. I don't know. Maybe I just put that on
you. I
think
we're friends.
Right? Okay. He ain't catch you back or something. Tell me what's going on. My man ghosting you right now. But what do you think, and be honest, forget the fact that we're at the coaches convention. What do you think of the level in the U.S., especially from probably where you maybe first heard of it in like maybe a World Cup or something to where it is now?
I think for me personally, if you're talking, trying to compare it with the Premier League, I'd say that they're in a way light years behind. I don't feel like the competition for the players is big enough. Like, no relegation, no promotion. So actually, what are you playing for? Some places to get into the playoffs. So then the league doesn't actually mean nothing. You win the league and what do you get for it?
Yeah.
I didn't know that you packaged all that smoke when you came here, dog. You went right.
Honest, I'm giving you me.
Please come to New York and be on our TV show officially. This will be dope. Yeah, I mean, I guess there's a lot of people here that would argue otherwise, but I think it's because they're also making money. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you would make more money just with that. You win the title, the players should be rewarded for it, and the club should be rewarded for it. If you go down, that means your team wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
Like, why, if you're not good enough, should you play against the best players in the MLS all the time? Like, that should be a privilege to play against, say, your New York Cities or your Red Bulls, because they're stronger teams.
Yeah. It's fascinating because it is just a matter of fact. It's just like the way you're describing it and the philosophy. It's English football has been this way for 100 years. And that's simply how it is. Like when we talk about, we enjoy as American soccer fans, we do enjoy the version of football that we have, which is like finding incentive in trying to make the playoffs and making MLS Cup mean something. And it is, I understand, like, it's really life or death, right? Where if you get relegated, that's like there's actual people that are penalized for that failure.
Jobs are lost.
Yeah, but it's like, as a player, you lose the Premier League title,
yeah,
which you worked hard to get in the first place. So you're no longer a Premier League player. You're now a Championship player.
Yeah.
So like, it's an award. It's a reward. It's an achievement. And it's like, yeah, I'm a Premiership player now. We deserved it. We fought all the way to get there. And in the MLS, what actually are you fighting for?
Yeah.
Like, you could be the best team all season,
yeah,
win that, get to the MLS Cup, just have one bad game, lose that, and now you're no longer classed as a champion.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. It's completely insane, dog.
Than it is to win the MLS Cup.
We got insanity, dog. That's what we want. We want bedlam. We want chaos.
I think it's maybe just the way the American sports fan has been conditioned is like, yeah, to the season doesn't really matter, right? Yeah, in almost any sport.
Like the NBA couldn't have promotion and relegation because I'm a Knicks fan and we'd be playing high school teams right now. What would happen, and be honest, what would happen in England if tomorrow the Premier League decided no more promotion and relegation?
There'd be uproar. I don't think, like, it just wouldn't happen. So, like, the people in the Championship, they win the league and what? They just stuck in the same league.
Yeah.
So what's the point?
You know, it never happened. Do you think it affects, because of that, do you think it truly affects the player and how much a drive they have and how good they want to be? You think the promotion relegation system genuinely, it makes players better as an individual because there's that risk?
Yeah, because you want to be the best and you want to be in the best team. So even if you do really well and your team goes, we could go and buy a player. You can't do that in the MLS. It's like two teams and the MLS have to come to an agreement. Oh yeah, you can take this player, but we have to take, no, we might want to build the squad make the squad.
Use the mic closer because we can't.
Yeah. So I said, basically I'm saying that it's like, if I worked hard as a Championship player, we got up, but then we got released, a Premier League team could walk in and buy me. They can't hear. Like, it's trading. It's like,
yeah.
I'm give you a sticker if you give me this sticker.
Yeah.
No, but then you're losing.
What was it like to play for the Red Bulls?
I love the disdain. You're just like, I'm done with this.
For you, just like, this is mad.
My first shock at Red Bulls was like, we finished the game. Came in the changing room and there was just all reporters in there. I was like, what the fuck is going on here?
That was staring at all your junk, dude. That's what we were reporting on. My man works for Pornhub, dog.
Unreal.
I remember we went to MLS Cup and we had a videographer with us who was a woman. An older woman saw us and she goes, just so you know, these men are going to be in showering. So maybe you don't want to bring them. I'm like, you here? And guess what? She had a 13-year-old boy with her, and he was like, had a blog or something. And I'm like, is there a section for people who shouldn't be here? Is that what you're trying to say? It was so confusing. American soccer is absolutely out of this world. I think more fun than the Prem, just because you never know what's going to happen. Somebody gets traded for imaginary money here. Damn. Yeah, it's exactly. Amazing. You don't have that in the Prem. You have real money. We play Monopoly out here, dog.
And we were, when we first were talking to you, we had mentioned your brother's rap career. This is something we want to talk about, at least with you, because we've been trying to talk to him about it. Maybe get him on the show to kind of spit some bars a little bit. But you were actually be complimentary of your brother's like rapping skills.
Yeah, he is very, very good.
Yeah.
But he just won't do anything. Nah.
You don't spit.
I'll stay out of that lane.
Yeah.
That lane's not for me. But he's very good. He just won't do anything until he retires, I don't think.
Okay.
I think he's got stuff out there, but people just don't know.
Yeah, he retires. He'll release a whole album probably.
He's got enough to do it.
Oh, okay.
I can't wait. I'm going to be sad when he retires, but man, this is going to be the catalog that comes after it. It's going to be impressive.
For someone like you to have Ian Wright hanging over your head, you know, Pops and that, you know what I mean? Right?
The old man.
I mean, how about the fact that he's like cool as hell now, like, or still? Like, he's still like on the edge of like hip.
He's a social media geek. That's why.
Yes, he is, dude. He's like, he's kind of like an Instagram thot.
Yeah, he's loving it right now.
Wow, you just called a thot to his son.
Yeah. And he agreed though. The dude is like, he's taking selfies in a Range Rover. Yeah, like, my guy, you're Ian Wright. How does that feel? Are you like, dad, get off the internet? Or are you like, yo, this is lit?
I just know you got to do what you got to do now, and social media is the powerfulest tool in the world, so if you can use it, why not use it?
Yeah,
okay.
Are you taking lessons from that? Like, he taught you how to play a little bit, right? Like he was there with
two different players, but yes, he was there for me.
Like he sort of showed you the game of, are you now also going to learn for Instagram from him? Because he's, on the forefront.
I'm not that active on Instagram. I only post when I'm doing work or I've got a lot of content to post, but he's got content for days.
Yes, he does.
Some of the pictures I've not even seen.
You're like, yo, you're my pops, man.
It's incredible the fact that you're right, older gentleman, right? But a Premier League legend, but he also, like, young people are not like, okay, boomer, you know?
No, not
him.
I mean?
They're actually very entertained by him and really see him as, we spoke to Troops from Arsenal Fan TV, and he was like, that's my dad. So you got another brother, bro. Yeah.
I feel like I'm born and raised, I don't know if you know Newark, New Jersey, not that far from where I'm from. A lot of us grew up without dads, me included. So it feels like we had, like, for us, like, I don't know, like A-Rod or Derek Jeter, that was our dad, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like Ian Wright was like, what's the word with the S? A surrogate dad for a lot of kids in North London. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right? I hear you.
That's pretty dope. What are you doing now in the South? Are you living in the US?
Yeah, Arizona. I'm following the sun, ain't I?
Oh, perfect.
Jersey was too cold for me in the winter.
Yeah. You're living in Arizona. All right. So terrible food, a lot of sun. How are you dealing with it?
Myself, isn't it? So
that's a good point.
Food doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, you're English. Food doesn't matter at all in the whole country. They're like, whatever, boil it. Put some salt on it, maybe. Salt's a little spicy, guys.
Not with my Caribbean background. Yeah. You wouldn't get away with
that. That's a good point. Okay, that's a good point. Yeah. All right. What are you here at the convention working on?
Well, myself, and obviously you've met my partners and my bosses, we got a platform called My Mentor.
Yeah.
So it's for, like, coaches, but it's seen from the educational side. So they can learn about decision-making, nutrition, the psychological side of it, and the mental strength. And you can create your own platforms to become a better coach and also a better person. But you can also use it for seminars as well.
Okay. So it's like something that you can just sort of stay on and go to. You don't have to go out and find a coach or something. You can just do it right from your phone.
You can learn off other coaches, of course. Initially, we're going to get to the point where you can take your badges and get your certificates online, but we're just not there yet. But the start off program is cool. Like, yeah, they brought it to me, and like I just said, I wish my Sunday league manager had a chance to have a platform like this so I could have learned the right things earlier.
Right.
That makes sense.
I thought it was in Spanish. I thought it was Mi Mentor, because it's MI Mentor. And then I had an idea. Wouldn't it be great if you guys did Mi Papa, right? I grew up with a father, right? But like, yo, you pull it up when you get home, and he's like, did you do your homework? And she's like, I got guided you. Don't eat that, right? Nutrition.
Okay, yeah, get the app developers working on it.
Right? Like, you can pick your shade, right? Like, oh, no, I'm
it's like
Caribbean.
Like an emoji.
Yeah.
So, I know.
Just an app idea for you.
I want to ask, lastly, that as far as when it comes to coaching and maybe how you were coached in the U.S. Compared to England, is there a particular, I don't know if it's a coaching style, a philosophy or mentality that you wish was involved in American soccer coaching that isn't?
From what I've seen so far, out of all the places, I feel like there's a gap between, like, I'd say from about 14 to 18, where it feels like the kids ain't playing enough or learning the right things. And I think that's the most important gap, because then after then they basically just go to USL or the MLS. So you're missing a big chunk of football, where I feel like now it's 2020. It's America. It's a big league. Everybody knows about it. There should be an academy system or even scholarships given to kids where they train every day with the right coaches and they get that education every day at the same time. And I think it's doable. And the MLS makes enough money. I don't see why they don't do it, to be honest with you.
Damn, yo, Sean Wright Phillips, club owner of the year.
Like, hey, fix this. What are you doing?
I want to invite you to my house. You'd be like, yo, move your couch over here. This ain't right. There's a gap between the living room and the kitchen, and we're just losing time out here.
Well, thank you for your sincerity and your honesty.
It honestly means the world to us that you would even come on our show.
Yeah, thank you so much, man.
Two dumb comedians, and they gave us a television show, and here they are.
Tell your brother to come through, man. We're dying to have him on the show.
Tell him we have zero bars. He's going to win immediately.
People are dying to see it. They want it. The streets want it.
Yeah, streets are talking. And they want that BWP/Cooligans.
Sean Wright, do you want to share any social media and people follow you? I know you're not super active, but if you want people to know what you're doing next.
Where can people find you?
If you want to find me, obviously, my Twitter is SWP29. on Instagram is SeanWP98. Come and check it out. It gets lively and then there's a little drought. And then I'll quench your first.
When it gets too hot. Charge my phone.
Sean Wright Phillips, thank you so much for taking the time.
Next time we're in Arizona, you gotta show us if there's any good like Jamaican food out there.
Yeah, there's two good, really good places.
Yeah, two.
All right. Let's go.
Two that I've been to and tried. I can't speak for the rest.
Yeah, there's two more than I thought would be there.
Yeah. I'm surprised there's even Jamaicans in Arizona, to be honest with you.
Sean Wright Phillips, thank you so much, man.
Thanks, man. Guys. Thank you.
All right, welcome back. I hope you enjoyed SWP.
What a wonderful and wildly open human being.
A very unexpected, but great dude. I'm glad he sat down with us.
Very rare do we have an interview where I'm like, dial it back, buddy.
Hey, jeez. Aren't you worried about how you're going to be perceived?
Ouch.
No, man. Great dude. Hopefully we get BWP on someday.
I want all the WPs. I want them all.
So one thing I wanted to make sure we talked about.
Do they have like an Archie Manning, like someone like no one knows what they do for a living?
Is there Archie Manning is the father.
Oh, who's
you mean the brother? I don't know his name.
Cody Manning?
Cooper. Cooper Manning.
What a terrible.
Hey, Cooper terrible. Wright Phillips, where are you at?
Yo, Ian, have another kid, dude.
So I wanted to talk about the Olympic qualifiers, which are coming up for the women's national team, obviously, and the men's national team.
Right. Olympic qualifiers across the board. But the men don't put in their senior squad.
Yes, it's the U23s, but three players that are above the age of 23. I think that's the rule for the Olympics. The women's national team for the women's side, they could play at any age. It does not matter. But the interesting thing was for the women's national team qualifiers, there was no TV deal in place.
And it starts
this week.
So awesome.
So finally, it was sorted out with Fox. They're going to be airing them. But this is like, you know, people are like, how can I watch the game? And then
they're like, well, we'll let you know soon.
Okay. Well, there's going to be some GeoCities site that's going to be available.
Yeah. We're on Wix right now building it. Don't you worry.
So CONCACAF finally sorted that out.
GeoCities?
GeoCities, yeah.
I used to call it Geocities.
I don't think that's what it is.
Of course not. Of course I'm wrong.
but this is the when I was hearing about this, it reminded me of a lot of the issues that a lot of the corruption within CONCACAF, especially, was because of TV deals.
I'll let you know if a red dot appears on your forehead at any moment.
No, but what happened was that because of the TV deals, the higher ups would basically take a cut and basically they pay me, and then you'll get the rights to the TV deal.
Of course.
So when it's
which I want to go on record as saying I would have also done.
it's a terrible thing to do.
Yeah, no, it's not great, but it just seems like it makes sense.
So when I hear stuff
if
like
I have control of
when
this.
I hear stuff like this about like it's like 11, the game is at 4 o'clock and at 3:59 the deal is put in place.
Exactly.
I'm like, okay. This doesn't seem on the up
a
and up.
Sketch.
It's a little sketchy.
Yeah.
I hope it was sorted out. I hope it was sorted out with.
Well, I'm just glad that people can watch the Olympic qualifying because so many of these. We were talking about Alex Morgan, 6 months pregnant, training. She wants to be a part of all of this.
Exactly.
So that's how serious they take these Olympics. Everyone's minds were on the Olympics right after winning the World Cup. So
yeah, it's huge for the women's national team and the men's national team. The men especially. Who
they
haven't even made it into the last like two Olympics, so they really need to like
they need a W.
And I'm glad we can watch them. All right, that's the important thing. All right, so we'll be back with more right after this, everybody.
Everybody, thanks so much for listening to the show. We just want to bring in with a word from one of our sponsors, Fubo.
Fubo, we've heard of them.
Yeah. See it on my checks.
So, yes, Fubo TV. There's a lot of people who are want to watch. Champions League is starting up real soon, the knockout rounds.
Absolutely.
You want to watch these games. I mean, if you are a fan of soccer and want the option, the ability to watch a ton of soccer games.
There's only one service for you.
Exactly. And literally all over the world, from the most popular to the most obscure of Fubo has it for you. I promise.
Do you want to see a second league, a second division Uruguayan game with 15 people at the game? Fubo's got it.
Fubo got you. All right?
Trust me, they do. You can see people milling about in the background. It's pretty crazy.
They're like, oh, what's this about? Oh, yeah. I'll go check it out.
They're playing soccer? Cool. I'm just going to walk this cow a little bit further and maybe I'll come back.
Yes. And you get that. And you can watch a PSG game against Madrid. It's wild.
It's crazy. They got a huge range, but we want to give you guys a chance to get a little extra free time.
Exactly. And if you guys want to give a trial for Fubo, you go to FuboTV.com/Cooligans.
What website was that?
FuboTV.com/Cooligans.
Wow.
And you get a 7-day free trial. Mm. And if you sign up, you get $30 off. So hey. What a great deal.
Give us the $30.
Yes, this is the commercial to donate to our GoFundMe.
You got a discount? What are you worried about?
Hey, I know you're good for it.
Yeah, I know you got it now. That's FuboTV.com/Cooligans.
Let's go.
It's like a Tai Chi Millie Rock you were just doing there.
It's a little Tai Chi Rock.
Yeah, okay.
I Tai Chi Rock on every block.
Ah, very slowly.
Okay, in every dojo. So, hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. My name is Christian Polanco.
That's right, and I'm Alexis Guerrero.
All right, we are your favorite stand-up comedians that host the funniest soccer show that you have ever witnessed.
100%.
Okay, and it's not only that.
It's not,
it's
right?
It's not just that.
We're something else. I can't remember. Oh, yeah, that's right. We're the gulliest.
That's right.
Yeah, get in their face, Christian.
I got out of the frame and everything.
All right. Let them know what's up.
That's how serious we are.
We mean it.
Okay. So, welcome to the show. We bring a
Sean Wright Phillip level of smoke.
Oh, that's
to
right.
Every episode.
Okay. We just completely trash our employer as soon as we start the show.
Which, like this couch. He's not kidding.
So, welcome to the show, everybody. We have to start today by talking about big news out of Atlanta.
Oh, my God. Finally, right? Because everyone was so upset that Julian Gressel got sent to, or he got signed by.
Yeah, he got traded to DC United.
Yeah.
So, obviously. There has to be a little bit of damage control because the fans, he was a fan favorite.
Yeah. And Darren Eales is like, don't worry about it. We've got a way to mitigate this negative news.
Okay. We have a few potential signings that I think are going to fix everything.
But if we took a couple photos and wait till we release these photos, everyone's going to be A-okay.
And this is how I think we realized that, obviously, I think Atlanta fans wanted probably players, right? To replace some of the ones that left. But I think this is a good alternative, a good replacement, because Atlanta United,
it's certainly cute,
has signed he goes by one name, Spike.
That's right. Sounds dangerous. No?
Okay. Spike is a dog.
Yeah. Also wildly photogenic. Is he a golden retriever?
I don't know.
Because if you're gonna name it Spike after the spike that they famously hit, it's gold, so you might as well be a golden retriever.
Okay, yeah, I know nothing about dogs. You put a bunch of dogs in a lineup, I'm like, I don't know.
I said this before. I can't tell the difference
between... Those are white males to me. I do not know.
I can't tell the difference between a dog, a fox, a coyote, a wolf. I don't know how people get mad at me. They're like, this one's red. I've seen red dogs before. I don't get it. I don't understand how y'all know the difference. What child video did I not see growing up that y'all saw? I had that thing that spun and it was like, the cow goes moo. I had that. At no point did they were like, the fox is red.
Alexis,
you know what I mean?
Alexis just got rid of that like 3 weeks ago.
I finally got to the llama. You know, it's impossible to get to that.
On one level, great marketing move.
This is great.
Everybody loves puppies.
Buddy, puppies.
Puppies are a hit.
You want to get your grandma. There's two things you can do. You can have a baby or a puppy. And if you have a baby that is a puppy, buddy, the Instagram likes are going to go crazy. A lot of questions.
What is the top half baby and the bottom half puppy? Or
did you just birth the whole puppy?
Yeah. These are fair questions. But no, clearly Darren Eales has this is a good, like I said, damage control. A lot of people
very
are upset.
Much so.
This is like you know, we trade away, you know, dad left, you know. Dad's not coming back, but
those cigarettes are going to take a long time to go get.
but look at this shiny new puppy.
And so they're training it as a service dog.
Yeah.
To
service the forwards with crosses and okay,
good service. Couple headers, that puppy jumping up. It's like Air Bud. They're doing a new Air Bud.
They're doing Air Bud. Okay, the Georgia edition.
Yeah. But I don't know, what is it for blind people? It's a service dog for people with anxiety, right? Sir,
yeah, I don't, service dogs can service people who can see as well. Yeah, it's not just.
I don't know. I don't know
the details. But look, he's gonna
read the back of his soccer card.
Yes, and the big thing was, and this was cool from the MLS PA, because there were a bunch of photos of the dog, and he was on a plane.
Yeah.
Spike was flying a charter flight to get to, his location, to get to Atlanta, and MLS PA had a great tweet. They said, is that a charter flight?
Then the monocle.
A little concerned over, it seems, because look.
They brought this into the CBA negotiation.
It's going to be an example. You got money. You got money on to charter a puppy.
Yeah.
From location to location. But after we play the Vancouver Whitecaps, we can't get home quickly.
So what? We got to have four legs? Is that what we got to do?
Okay. Which is, look. I think it's a generally for a lot of the casual fans. I think Atlanta United fans are happy. I think it's a good move.
This doesn't take the pain away from losing players you love.
Exactly.
And also, I thought it was a bad PR move to brand this puppy with five stripes. A little much.
Yes. Given that the dog was so young.
Yeah.
Maybe.
They feel it. You know what I mean?
Anyway, yes. Cool. I wish Spike a great season.
Yeah.
Hopefully he can contribute on and off the pitch.
Yeah. So puppy allocation money went a long way.
Pam. We love Pam.
Shouts to Pam.
So I always try to mix it up with, I say yo, I say hey, you know,
do a couple different things.
So people, so I can hit every demographic. Keep across the country, you know?
You know what I mean? Howdy. Welcome back.
So everybody's like, okay, he's talking to me.
Oh, wow. Oh, this segment is for me specifically.
So we have to, again, we were in Baltimore, mm-hmm. For the United Soccer Coaches Convention. And we had a great time. We interviewed a bunch of people, and we have another interview for you guys. This was with Peter Wilt, who was the first Chicago Fire GM. He's just really one of these people that before MLS existed in 1996 when it started, he was one of those people, groundbreaking people in American soccer.
Getting stuff done.
Exactly.
He was like a GM. He was a GM or working for indoor teams before MLS existed, and you know, he is sort of everything in the wake of the NASL shutting down in 84.
Yeah So a lot of people had to get involved and help American soccer, you know, not only just exist but grow. He was one of those people, so we get to know him a little bit. So here's our interview with Peter Wilt.
United Soccer Coaches Convention.
Again, we're still here.
We're still here. We're not going anywhere because we keep getting these incredible interviews, and this one, whew. I know it's you, buddy. This guy, let me see, I think you won MLS Cup in your first year as a GM.
First year in Chicago, yes. Double, actually, because we got the U.S. Open Cup that year as well.
All right, sometimes you got to toot your own horn if you want to hear music. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, put your hands together unless you're driving, for the one, the only, Peter Wilt, everybody. And look, you did it. Absolutely. You are a figure in American soccer.
Figure eight?
Something.
Crash in the middle?
Well, here's the thing. When your name gets brought up, a sea of American soccer people have two reactions. Big smiles or, oh, no, is he here? And why is it so polarizing? Tell the people who you are and why.
I only run into the people that love me. I haven't run into anyone that hates me.
I don't think hate. I think it's
afraid.
It's like fear.
Oh, that's fine then. That's fine. I don't know. I suppose because I'm out there in social media quite a bit.
Yeah.
I'm fan friendly, and I've taken a different approach than maybe a lot of other executives.
And why is it? Because you're beloved by the fans, especially all of our friends that are Chicago Fire fans. You are wildly beloved, and not just for winning. It's because you sort of bonded with the fans in a way that I don't think I've ever seen from a front office person.
I'd like to think I'm respected and liked by fans in any market that I've started teams. But Chicago, I think, in particular, because, well, I've started a few different teams there. But also, I think they contrast the experience they had while I was there with the experience they've had with executives after I was there, and it hasn't been as good.
Okay.
And at least
that's a very Midwestern way to bust shot.
And I like, just like Alexis was saying, the when your name is brought up, you are a person, I feel like if people are not super connected to the American soccer scene, they may not know who you are. And there's a lot of people that we've met at this convention that have so much history in the game and are partly responsible for getting the game to where it is today. So before you got the job at Chicago Fire in MLS, what were you doing before that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair question, because I'd been kicking around soccer industry for about 10 years, actually.
Okay.
Before I was hired in Chicago, and actually with minor league hockey before that and baseball before that. But I go back to 1987 and my soccer roots, running the front office for the oldest continuous professional soccer team in the United States. Either of you have a guess of what team that is?
The oldest continuous
pro soccer team in the United States.
Oldest contributor. Brooklyn Italians?
Brooklyn Italians. I was going to say that.
They're not professional.
You're right.
Yeah.
The Cosmos?
Some people think it's they're not continuous. Some people think it's the team that plays a couple blocks behind where we are right now, which is the Baltimore Blast.
Okay.
The Baltimore Blast fans claim that, but the truth is they took a couple years off and became the Baltimore Spirit. So
not continuous.
Exactly. So that brings us to the Milwaukee Wave. 1984-85, they started. I started running the front office in 87.
Okay.
And I did that for 4 years. We hired some good people. They're filled the Bradley Center indoor.
They've always been.
Well, they took a little bit as an outdoor team, but they've basically been an indoor team since the beginning. And then I went to be general manager of the Chicago Power of the indoor league back then. And we're fortunate to win a championship.
An energy company.
Indoors. They're actually in the basement of a refinery.
Maybe that's why they didn't last forever. They ended up moving to Edmonton, becoming the Edmonton Drillers Part 2, I think, at some point. But so I did the Chicago Power. We won a couple championships there. Then went to work for the Minnesota Thunder. I joined them when they went from being an amateur team to a professional team. Worked with Mr. Buzz Lagos, and we won some championships there. And I was recruited to become the first general manager of the Chicago Fire, which was Chicago MLS at the time, went through the whole branding thing at the beginning.
And here's the thing. You started at a time when now people getting started at the level that you started at lower leagues, they're trying to figure out how to make a career out of that. How do you stay in the game? There's so many clubs that are opening and closing and changes being made every year. How did you survive sort of that point to get to the point where you are now?
Yeah, back then, in some ways, it was easier because it was the dark ages of professional soccer. There was a decade in America where there was no first division outdoor soccer.
Yeah, right.
NASL died in 84. MLS, basically 96 when they started playing games, a year two before that, where they were getting ready. That's when I got into it, was during the dark ages. So there weren't as many obstacles or barriers. There weren't as many people trying to get into it. There weren't as many opportunities either, to be fair. But nowadays, it's the opposite. There's a slew of opportunities at every level. I've never seen so many opportunities in professional soccer or now in amateur soccer with the lower divisions. But there's also a huge pool of qualified talent that didn't exist before. I mean, I got my first job in soccer because I told the ownership of the Milwaukee Wave I didn't know anything about soccer. They said they're tired of soccer people telling them how to run their business. I understood sports business at that point because I was working for the successful minor league hockey team. And so they hired me for the business aspect of it. And it kept like that until the late 90s, early 2000s, where it was difficult to find people that had a background in both sports business and knowledge of soccer.
Yeah.
Okay.
And now we're fortunate. There's this, when I went to talk to the USL folks down in Tampa about the new position I have, they had me meet with, I counted up, I met 17 different people in their front office.
Wow.
And it might have been a quarter of how many people worked there.
All at once?
I wish. Then yeah, it would have been done easy.
Easier, right?
Yeah. But it amazed me afterwards. I thought back on it. I was like, the number of people I met with who are young and really understood what the soccer landscape is and how to promote the sport in this country. And it made me kind of proud, being kind of, I guess, an old man in this industry, that I feel a little bit responsible for helping educate this next generation of administrators.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's I mean, we saw you last year in Chicago, for the United Soccer Coaches Convention. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of people from, you were involved in Ford Madison. I remember you had the scarf there last year as well. And
I only own one scarf, so I just wear this one everywhere I go.
It's a minimalist.
And I'm curious, because you are so like a front facing kind of administrator, and you talk to a lot of people on social media, and you're very involved especially that social media aspect. When social media came around, how do you initially see it, and how did you, was it an exciting thing? Like, oh, cool, I'm going to be able to connect with people. Or it's just like, oh, I'm going to have to do this now.
It was more the former.
Okay.
It's an extension of what I've always done in my career, just with different media.
Right.
And it goes back to when I was a kid. When I was in school, I wrote a letter to the owner of the Chicago White Sox, Hall of Fame baseball owner and promoter, Bill Veeck.
Okay.
I was complaining that he hired a former Cub to be a White Sox manager.
Yeah, you can't. You can't do it.
No. He did. So I wrote him a not nice letter. Just to kind of vent.
Right. Got to get
wrote,
it out.
He wrote. He wrote me back.
Okay.
And it was obvious from his return letter that he had read my letter, and it was customized and personalized.
It's surprising he wrote back, given you wrote the letter with magazine clippings.
Yeah. How did he get the return address?
So that was great.
Yeah. And the powdery substance. Oh, sure. But it made an impact on me. And then I wrote him back. I said, oh, my gosh. And I disagreed with him. I said, right. No, he's still an ex-Cub. You can't hire this guy. And then he wrote me back. We actually had a dialogue. We became kind of pen pals. And it made an impression on me that I carried over until the day I got to be in a similar position and interact with fans. Mm-hmm. So I recognized a couple things, what it means to the fan to get that correspondence.
Yeah.
And
but now they get that correspondence so fast.
It has changed. The technology has changed. So when I got into sports originally, it was with the minor league hockey team in Milwaukee, the Admirals, and I would be the designated guy in our office to attend booster club meetings.
Right.
It wasn't supporters clubs. It was booster club meetings. And, I was a kid still just out of college, and I enjoyed going to these booster club meetings. They were drinking beer. I'd drink beer, hang out with them.
Yeah.
I kind of became one of them. And develop friendships, and it provided for better continuity and connection between the front office and the fans. I carried that over to when I went to indoor soccer with Milwaukee Wave and Chicago Power. And then by the time the internet started to be impactful with the Minnesota Thunder, there was some of that dialogue going on with the public that I was getting into, but really it was an MLS. BigSoccer.com was the big one.
Yeah.
And it became an efficient way to...
There was a message board, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It still is out there.
It was like for a long time, Americans didn't have a place to watch or read, or newspapers weren't talking about it. Radio shows weren't talking about it. Yeah. News channels weren't talking about it. Big Soccer was talking about it.
Before Twitter, before Facebook, it was the only way for this subculture of American sports to communicate.
Yeah.
And they did. I was one of the few administrators that took advantage of it and put myself out there. For better or worse, to develop, to answer questions, to clarify issues.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And to me, it was just common sense. It served a couple purposes. It prevented wild rumors from getting out of control.
Right.
It answered the questions that were really on fans' minds. And it gave us ideas and perspective from our audience that we needed to take into consideration when making our own decisions, whether it was about the makeup of the team or the marketing efforts, so that we were doing things with the end user in mind.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you've seen so much from your start of your career in soccer to where it is now. I guess for some, for two people like us who kind of, I've been a fan of the game for a long time, but came into American soccer a little bit later.
Last August, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Right? I saw one game and I'm like, you know what? I think I get it.
I've been an Inter Miami fan my entire life.
Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. I don't tell you.
Nashville SC till I die, dog. But what you've seen is a lot of ups and downs. It's hard for us to sort of place it, right? Where do you think American soccer is right now? And this is, yes, on the heels of the U.S. not qualifying for the World Cup, but now sort of being a little bit further out of it, a MLS player now being the head coach of the men's national team, MLS where it is, the fees coming in, the expansion, the sort of overwhelming call for maybe some changes to the single entity system, everything you see, where do you think American soccer is now? Preach to us, youngins.
Well, you know, back in the 70s, they said with Pelé and the Cosmos and even Minnesota Strikers and Rochester, they said it's going to be the sport of the 70s.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
All these kids are going to be playing the sport in the 80s. Well, okay, maybe it's a sport of the 80s, sport of the 90s.
We were on too much cocaine in the 70s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. We went a little too far. We have big ideas.
Yeah, yeah.
So they thought it was going to be a revolution. They thought overnight at some point there'd be maybe an American star that would come about.
Or like this overwhelming love affair with the game.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the truth is it's always been about an evolution, not a revolution. Mm-hmm. That's used a lot of spikes and then valleys. A lot of it has to do with signature events, World Cups usually, both men and women. The 99 Women's World Cup was the most important soccer event, I think, in my lifetime, because it really made an impact on the social aspects of society as well as the sporting aspect.
Absolutely.
I mean, that and Title IX really changed what sports is, and more than sports, what life and opportunities are for girls and women.
And because America did so well, it piggybacked and created change elsewhere in the world, which is great.
Winning always helps. In the 94, obviously, was huge with the World Cup here. It opened the eyes to a lot of mainstream media about the sport. They totally expected it to fail, and it filled the stadiums. And then MLS and the evolution of MLS and signing of key players. Freddie Adu, even though he has failed as a player, he did make a huge impact on the level of acceptance of the sport in this country. And the interest in the sport in the mainstream peaked with his signing. He was worth 9,000 extra tickets for every game when he was playing with DC United.
That's huge.
Yeah. It was amazing. And then when Beckham came, again, huge, not just for spectatorship, but my goodness, there were stadiums built because of him. There are suites sold because of him. There are broadcast deals done because of him. And there are expansion franchises that went northwards in price because of him.
He filled Giant Stadium. Yeah. I remember that game. Yeah, people like, you got to go. These people that weren't even soccer fans. I'm like, how do you know about this game, you know?
Yeah, and he ended up performing on the field as well, which was nice. It gave more credibility to the signing for the soccer purists that hoped he wasn't just going to be a shiny object. ESPN does an annual survey. I'm going to forget his name, but Dr. Richard. I forgot his name. Yeah. But what is your favorite American sport to watch, or favorite sport to watch? Soccer did not crack the top four between the start of the survey in 93 until 2012, finally knocked out hockey and auto racing.
Oh,
baseball's still up there. That's for ages 12 plus. And it's been in the top four ever since then. For ages 12 to 24, soccer is now number two behind pro football. Now, soccer isn't just MLS in that survey. It's international soccer and all that. Among Latinos, it's number one. So that shows that, you know, in this evolution, it has now crashed through a certain ceiling, and there's an age wave. Obviously, I'm an old white guy in my demographic. It's still a 1% interest in the sport. And the average age of a World Series viewer is my age, 59. Last year was my age, 58. Year before it was 57. Does not bode well for baseball's future. Yeah. Major League Baseball's future. I think it's a different topic, but minor league baseball is in good shape for different reasons. It's more of a community asset.
Well, now a lot of younger people are watching because of all the cheating drama, and kids love reality shows.
We need the real Housewives of Major League Baseball.
I think the cheating will help, actually.
Yeah, just like steroids did. It was all like,
come on, MLS, start cheating. Let's get some numbers.
I want to talk about the Chicago Fire and your time with them, and maybe you can reflect a bit. There was a lot of success while you were there, and what's going on now? Like, obviously, you are wearing the Chicago Fire hat with the best logo ever. And after this rebrand, we have to be honest, people are losing their minds, and it's gotten to the point where they are beating a dead horse. It is getting the people are now who people who don't like the badge are getting mad at people who publicly do not like the badge because they're tired of hearing people not like the badge, right? So what I'm sure you probably would have handled it differently.
David Vaudrey, everyone. Vaud's wearing a Princeton shirt, and to show him how much I love him, I'm wearing my Princeton jacket today.
Amazing.
And my Chicago Fire pullovers in the hotel.
With nice. the classic logo.
Okay, look.
Thanks, Vaud.
And we were just talking about that. Exactly. Yeah. So clearly, I think we know where you stand when it comes to the badge. But of how the Chicago Fire being handled right now, what are your thoughts on how they can sort of get through this and find success somewhere?
So to answer that question, let me go back to the last question, which I feel like I didn't really finish answering. I think the future of American soccer, the next step we're in our evolution to show that we're not at the be all and end all yet, is to kind of fill out the American landscape with spectator soccer. I think, you know, we see, you know, the trees in the forest because we're so close. So we're seeing the major markets and MLS, right, and even USL Championship to some degree. And where the future is in the medium-sized markets, in the small markets. There's 30 to 40 new professional soccer teams that are going to come online in the next 5 to 10 years. And they're likely mainly going to be USL championship teams, or USL League One, actually, more so than championship. And when those markets start filling out, you know, the smaller, more the Sioux Falls of the world, or Little Rocks. Chattanooga is the example, the shining object of example. Then we truly become a soccer nation, where it's not just kind of the blue states and the blue markets,
right,
but we get into middle America that starts to embrace it. And it's something I'm very excited to be part of, is helping these markets with their supporters group culture develop teams. Chicago Fire rebranding, I'm biased, obviously, and it was difficult for me to accept that they were going to rebrand in the first place. I was worried they're going to change the whole name.
Okay.
So I was pleased that they decided not to change the name.
All right.
And I came to accept the fact that the logo would be changed. As it came out, I tried to keep quiet about it. I didn't want to be the lead person on opinions of it.
Because your voice is too powerful. In that community. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I waited to see the public reaction. It didn't take long. Mm-hmm. But to me, the negative reaction, well, first of all, any change is difficult for people to accept. No matter how great a change it would have been, there have been some people, especially the longtime fans, that would have pushed back on it. But the preponderance of fans that pushed back certainly indicated that there's an issue with the aesthetics of the logo. And I am no art major, but I tended not to like the changes that were made. Specifically, I guess the color changes, the lack of iconography with Chicago, the symbolism, lack of carryover of anything of the original mark. That being said, I had less of an issue about where the logo ended up than I did with the process. There didn't seem to be much transparency in the process, and there didn't seem to be much communication with longtime fans in the process. And I think if they would have just done those two things, even if they ended up where they did, there would have been much less pushback than there ended up being. Transparency.
And probably less anger.
Absolutely. I mean, the transparency and connection with the fans is always going to create a sense of ownership of the end product by the fans because they were involved in the process.
Right. It seems to me like someone like yourself, especially being in that market or any market, and you having success with your brand of leadership, which is involving the fans and being almost one with the fans and creating a bit of a bridge. You're almost like an ombudsman between the front office.
Well, because the team really belongs to the fans. Owners and management are temporary. They're caretakers.
Right.
You know, hopefully they're there for a long time, but eventually it's passed on to someone else.
My point is, if they saw you be successful, why isn't everybody doing what you do? Why don't we have 100,000 Peter Wilts out there, man? What is going on? I don't understand. If everybody, you know, everyone hates you, why would you dig deeper? You know, and that's not one person in particular. I'm talking about like there's a slew of, you know, people in the front offices that feel like no. The wall between me and the fans when you were the other way.
I think there is a human nature when you get a position of leadership to make all the decisions yourself. And it's a natural thing for management to be top down instead of bottom up. That being said, there's much more bottom up approach to soccer leadership now than there used to be.
Okay.
NWSL, you look at the work Elise LaHue
is
doing
incredible.
At Sky Blue. I was fortunate to hire her as my first intern with the Chicago Red Stars.
Oh, wow. Really?
And we were talking earlier and I was congratulating her on all her success. And she very nicely gave me credit for her leadership style. And she's giving me too much credit for that. But I think there's much more of that nowadays, and especially with younger leaders, they get it. But even in MLS, you look at, you know, Portland has done a good job. Sporting Kansas City.
Yeah.
Rob Heineman has done a good job. And where you have those examples, I think the relationships between the fans and the front office may not be perfect, but it tends to be better.
Right.
Yeah. You know? It's just it's impressive. And I enjoy hearing about your history and a lot of work, because, again, like I was saying before, there's a lot of things do not happen in American soccer if Peter Wilt is not helping build it. And I know that you are currently working with USL. What is your role with USL? And and what's know if necessarily the future of the league, but what is your role and what you're trying to do there?
It's pretty exciting. I was running Forward Madison and they approached me about helping them with new market development.
Okay.
Essentially, they have me also working with some of the existing teams, but mainly I'm working with new markets on developing the supporters culture in those places, so that when these new teams start up, they're not starting up in a vacuum, but they already have an existing fan base, specifically supporters, that are helping guide them and helping create the excitement in the community. There's examples of this already. To me, the shining examples are the Sons of Ben in Philadelphia, around for a couple of years before the Union was around. And then the same in Indianapolis, where I started Indy 11. The Brickyard Battalion was actually working to bring professional soccer to Indianapolis for several years before Ursal Ozdemir and myself went public and started the team. And having that supporters base in a community really makes it more of a broad base, community driven effort that's likely to succeed, rather than that top down rich guy says, I'm buying a franchise. All right, this is what the name is. This is what the prices are. Open the doors, buy.
Yeah. And also, I'll buy a couple supporters. Just stand here and cheer. You know, it seems to me like when you look at soccer on the overall, it's really exciting. You look at these USL clubs, they're popping up left and right. USL now has three levels, if I'm not mistaken. There's USL Championship, League One, and two. And then there's also NPSL. And I say, here's my question. Team like Forward Madison, a team like pick any other USL team, how are they making money if they're not able to continue to grow or rise up to a different level? And I'm not saying that they need that. I just don't understand. How is it that they're successful if they're sort of stuck in this middle position? And maybe I just don't understand it.
Yeah, well, I think if your question is about, you know, profit loss, making money, not making money.
How are they staying open? It doesn't have to be necessarily actual cash influx.
I mean, there's two ways of looking at it. One is from operating capital.
Yeah.
You're profitable on an annual basis or not. And the other is evaluation of the franchise.
Right.
Are you going to be able to sell the team in 10 years for more than you've invested over those 10 years? And I, on the latter aspect, I don't think professional soccer has ever been in a better place than it is now. It's because of the stability of the leagues, particularly MLS and USL.
Yeah.
Where, you know, 10, 15 years ago, people might have looked at those two leagues and said, maybe they'll be around in 5 years. Maybe they won't be. But now, especially with all the infrastructure, the brick and mortar that's being built in both leagues, there's assurances that these teams and the league will be around, which allows evaluation of those teams to grow and grow. So even if they are losing a little bit of money on an annual basis, they can make it up when they eventually sell the team. I mean, MLS is... valuation skyrocketing is a remarkable story.
Every year.
Yeah. Every year.
It's somewhat supply and demand. It's all supply and demand. It's obviously a limited supply, but we don't know what that limit is. Maybe 40.
Don Garber's raising the limit every week.
Yeah. I think the guy's got a gambling problem. What's happening here? He's got to pay off some big debts. If somebody
offered you $350 million, would you not find a way to give him another
100%?
Hey,
there would be 700 teams in MLS if I ran MLS. I'm not saying I'd be good at the job. I'd just be like, yo, I can't hear you because of the wall of money I've built.
You know, it's a big country, a lot of zip codes. Yeah. You should really have a team in each one.
Yeah, so what? I put three in the same block. They got money, I got teams.
You must not like competition.
Yeah. Oh, wow. What, you just want one team, dude? Is that what you want? Give me $7 million, I'll give you one team. If someone told you in 1980, what was it, four when you started with Milwaukee Waves?
87.
87. If someone in 87 said to you, hey, I'm you in the future, someone's going to give a top flight league $350 million to put a club in the South. What would you have said?
Yeah, crazy. That's crazy talk, especially outdoor soccer. I mean, back then,
that wasn't even a thing.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there is a couple semi-pro teams. There's nothing in Wisconsin. But indoor soccer, I might have said, no.
Yeah. Outdoor soccer, you would have pepper sprayed me. Yeah. If I said, hey. That's crazy. You know, to look sort of when you look at a lot of fans, that especially that we talk to, are newer fans. So they see the league where it is and they want it to be the Premier League. They want it to be League IMX.
They want pro rel.
And they're like, well, why don't we take what we have and just make it better? And everyone else, especially in your position, is like, have you any idea how lucky we are to even be here? So I love that you sort of do bridge that gap, because we've interviewed some people who are like, you're wrong. And if the Premier League started today, it'd be like the NFL, and the NFL makes more money. And then there's folks like you who are like, I see both sides of the argument. You know, if you were made soccer czar in this country, soccer czar.
I'm not.
Huh? Yeah. I hate to tell you, you got to take that off your business card. If someone made you soccer czar and you got to do whatever you wanted, and it worked immediately as soon as you said it, what would you? Yeah, you're checking to make sure you put it in there. What would you? What's the first change you would make to any part of American soccer right now? And I can hear the gears turning. Already you said I'm not allowed to say that on microphone in your head.
Yeah. Well, okay. Hear me out.
Yes. Get rid of us.
Every 10 minutes of the game, we throw another ball on the field.
Please tell me that's a joke.
By the end of the game, we've got 9 balls on the field.
Americans want to see scoring.
Riotous.
Yeah. That's not really the first thing you'd do, is it?
Nah, maybe the second or third.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm known for my efforts to start NISA, and which would include promotion relegation, eliminate some of the barriers to entry, and, you know, understand all the risks and also the opportunities that entails. I would like someone to try promotion and relegation in this country, almost as an experiment, just to see what the effect would be.
Why can't USL do that? They've got three leagues.
I think they're open to it in the future when all the teams at all their levels are have reached business stability
or solvency, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that makes sense. It's by waiting, it's going to create other challenges of determining, well, if you get promoted or you get relegated, what are the parachutes or the preventative measures or the, I'll say, penalties to get promoted,
right,
to pay for going up. But by waiting, there's a better chance that once it's implemented, it will be implemented successfully. I think if you do it now, there's too much of a risk of teams going down, suffering too much and affecting their business, and teams being promoted. They may not be prepared for it. I mean, that's another thought. People don't always think about it. When a team is promoted, do they have the financial wherewithal to perform at a higher division?
Right.
I think it's less of an issue, frankly, for second to third, a third to second. A bigger issue will come if and when a first division league is layered on top of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Huh. And before we let you go, I want to ask one question. Maybe it's a big question, but you've again, you've been involved in soccer for a long time. You've accomplished a lot of things. Is there anything that stands out as your proudest achievement or accomplishment in soccer that your career still has a very, very bright future? You're still accomplishing a lot of things. But is there anything that stands out for you? Like, I'm glad I accomplished that.
Well, on one hand, I'm really proud that people like Elise LeHue are carrying on some of the traditions and styles that I've hopefully have exemplified. But as far as something singularly proud of that maybe people don't think about, was starting this little indoor team in Chicago. I think it was 2010, called the Chicago Riot.
Okay.
We had 35 days to put it together.
Wow.
It was a league owned team because the league was floundering. It was down to four teams, and the league owners came to me and asked if I would go to Chicago and start this team. And we put together a representative team in a great venue with unbelievable promotions. It was so much fun, too, because we had no one really to report to.
Right. And you're like, well, if this fails, yeah. You gave me 35 days. Yeah. So let's just do whatever the hell we want.
So I'm kind of proud of that. Obviously, the championships, I'm fortunate to win in four different leagues. I think I've started more pro soccer teams than anyone else in history, which is kind of neat. And with the Chicago Fire, I don't think anyone will ever replicate this. We won the Eastern Conference, Western Conference, and the rare Central Conference or Central Division championships.
We're going to have to start making up some conferences.
Jeez. Incredible. Well, Peter, Will, thank you so much for joining us. This is an absolute honor.
And make sure, like, how can people know that you're going to come to their
city
and help?
I don't want people talking to me.
Yeah, okay. Well, then,
very shy.
Yeah, I think you can tell.
Yeah, at PeterWilt1 on Twitter. You can DM me and I'll get back to you.
Okay.
What a great guy. Thank you so much for being here. This is an honor.
Cheers.
Mine too.
Thank you so much.
All right. So that was Peter Wilt. How great was he?
Oh, I thought you were going to do another regional.
No, hello. No. Just now we're back. readjust. Now we're talking to soccer fans exclusively. If you're not a soccer fan, stop watching.
Well, then play ball or whatever they
No, we have to talk about a couple other things obviously the MLS season is going to be starting pretty soon at the end of February.
It's coming fast.
Champions League is coming soon as well, but there's already rumors about players possibly coming to the league.
Unless there's a strike.
That's right. And that is something we should point out. January 31st is the end of the current collective bargaining agreement. Yes, so that's tomorrow.
Well, no, that's Thursday. So
yes. Tomorrow is exactly like this. So anything could happen. We don't know exactly, February 1st, what we can look forward to. Hopefully next week we can say, hey, there's a deal in place and we don't have to worry about anything. But Champions League matches start about 2 or 3 weeks after, into February. There's not going to be games. MLS teams are not going to be playing if there's no CBA.
CBA, they can't. Right?
Exactly.
They'd have to go get a bunch of scabs from, I guess, other leagues, right? Maybe Spike, you're in, buddy. Get in there.
Good news, buddy. You're playing every position. So
over here, Spike. Getting goals, Spike.
the uh, the one, I mean, some of the players that are rumored to be coming into the league. One of them is Rogelio Funes Mori,
who was at FC Dallas's academy.
Yes. But then he obviously went to Mexico, playing for Monterrey, and obviously just lighting it up.
Doing a great job at Monterrey.
Exactly. I mean, we just saw a bicycle kick in the final. The dude.
Wild disrespectful.
Brother of Ramiro Funes Mori,
right.
Everton legend.
The word legend is now being stretched a bit here.
Okay, I've disrespected the word, to be honest. But Funes Mori has been great. So the rumor is that he might go to Inter Miami. But Monterrey losing a player like that would be huge. Clearly, they have either they're going to get
they're going to want money for that.
A ton of money.
This isn't on a free.
And that they have a good replacement in place because he is an important player for them. Also, Pedro
apparently got an offer from Inter Miami
and NYC or at least rumored
showed interest from NYCFC.
Yeah.
Vissel Kobe, which is where David Villa went in Japan. Right. They apparently are interested. And the rumor is that they're offering him a ton of money.
Yeah.
And now looks like Roma is in the game for him.
Yeah. And Pedro, obviously at Chelsea, I think he fell out of favor with Frank Lampard. There's like players. Frank Lampard is playing 14 year olds out there.
Yeah.
And they're doing well. So he's like, I don't need this old man.
Yeah.
You're 31? Yeah, nah,
like,
man.
He's like, Pedro, I mean, you ain't even on TikTok. How am I supposed to?
I can't. I mean, you know.
You want me to try to get you in there like you ain't even doing a whoa.
You don't even know how
you
to do it.
You ain't lip singing.
So you still on Vine, dog. No. The app is dead.
It's dead. How are you uploading, dog? MySpace.
I can't have this associated with my club.
I'm embarrassed, dude. I think I saw you still using Facebook. Damn. Okay, boomer.
Speaking of TikTok, have you seen Alfonso Davies on TikTok?
I have not.
He has been dominating on TikTok, putting out some high quality content.
Really?
Yeah, making fun of all his teammates' goal celebrations and different things like that. Yo, follow. Alfonso Davies on TikTok. He's dominating Bundesliga and German social media.
Damn, he got a lot of time on his hands.
No, he's doing great out there.
We did it.
We did it again, crushing it.
I mean, people think like, oh, it must be difficult making incredible television. Apparently, no.
Okay, they let any rubes in this room.
But here we are making genius content.
Okay, look, clearly,
name another show that talks about puppies and TikTok and soccer. I dare you.
So, thank you again for joining us. Again, my name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerrero.
I did that too soon. Make sure you follow us at Soccer Cooligans.
Leave Google a 5-star Sports. Review, the whole nine, yada, 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 yada.
Subscribe to the Join YouTube
Gully
channel.
Squad.
Join Gully Squad. Do all those things. Support us as and support Fubo Sports. So, with that said, my name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerreros.
And together, what are we?
The Cooligans!